continue to bless this conference. In Jesus' name, Father, be glorified. Amen.
We're going to be talking about some important topics like hope, love, joy, and choice. But they're in the midst of some difficult circumstances and difficult struggles that we face. So we're going to start out talking about hope in the midst of disappointment. Disappointments come in a variety of ways. Sometimes we experience heartbreaking disappointments. And the biggest heartbreak of my life was the sudden and unexpected death of my wife of over 45 years. The biggest heartache of Jody's life was the sudden and unexpected death of her husband of over 42 years. It was heartbreaking disappointment for both of us. There's also unsettling disappointments. Just this past August, I was diagnosed with intermediate stage prostate cancer. It's unsettling, and it's certainly disappointing. Then there's inconvenient disappointments. Did you ever experience an inconvenience that prevented you from getting somewhere that you really wanted to be? It was a disappointment. How about an embarrassing disappointment? Did you ever do something wrong that you thought that you would never do? And then it was exposed to others? You were disappointed in yourself. And you're disappointed in how others could so easily shame you with it. How about disappointments of broken trust? Did you ever experience the stinging disappointment of betrayal by a friend? Or disappointments leading to sadness and hurt? How about the disappointment from someone that you love who shuts you out of their heart? Or worse yet, who abandons you? Disappointments come in a variety of ways, but they also come with various intensities. Sometimes our disappointments are mildly upsetting, and sometimes our disappointments are catastrophic and shattering. Where is hope in the midst of our disappointment? Sometimes we lose hope. In the midst of disappointment, it's easy to lose hope. Something that we wanted very much has been lost. Or something that we did not want to happen has happened. Disappointment can lead to disillusionment and loss of hope. At other times, we misplace our hope. Not only is it easy to lose it, but it's very easy to misplace our hope and not even realize that we've misplaced it. We've placed our hope in places that can't do us any good. So where is hope in the midst of disappointment? Are you guys familiar with Where's Waldo? How many are familiar with Where's Waldo? Almost everybody, I think. Well, you know about Waldo? It just comes out of a children's series of children's books. And the books consist of detailed illustrations of various people doing different things in one location. And your task is to find where Waldo is. Waldo's a specific character. So there's what Waldo looks like. He's always identified by his red and white striped shirt, his bobble hat, and his glasses. But there's also some characters that look pretty close to Waldo. Some illustrations are fairly easy to find Waldo in. He may be mixed in with dozens of people. And some illustrations are extremely complicated to find Waldo in. Well, this week, we're going to be looking for Waldo each time that I speak. Where is Waldo in this case, in the midst of our disappointment? Where is hope in the midst of our disappointment? So here's a complicated picture of Waldo. It's small, and there's lots of detail. Can you find Waldo? I'd guess probably not. You'd have to get up really close and look and look and look. Where's Waldo? Well, like finding Waldo in this picture, it can be difficult and complicated to find where our hope really lies. When we have misplaced hope, it's often hidden even from our own awareness. We need clues to show us where to look. Pain is one such clue. Disappointments can be painful, and how we experience that pain will expose where we have placed our hope and our trust. It will show us where our hope lies. So I'm going to help you out with Waldo a little bit. Look right inside that circle. Can you see him now? It's still pretty small, isn't it? You probably need to walk right up to it, but he's right in the midst of that circle. Well, it's like coming back to this Waldo picture and having a circle placed around where we should look when we look at how we experience pain. It's a great big clue that narrows it way down for us. So how we experience pain in our disappointments is going to give us a clue as to where we have placed our hope. What do you experience when you experience the pain of disappointment? What do you feel? What you feel will expose where your hope lies. I'm going to place feelings in two categories here up on the screen. A category of devastation and a category of heartache. Let's look at those categories and think about the words that are under them. First, under the category of devastation. What's it like to feel these feelings? Outraged, furious, aggravation, wrathful, bitterness, giving up, and despondent. Now listen to the following words under the category of heartache. Sadness, sorrow, grief, wounded, aching and tender heart, forbearance and displeasure. What's the difference in the feelings between these two categories? Can you see a difference? They both hurt, but there's a difference in the way that the pain is experienced. The feelings in the devastation category have an edge to them. One person said, those emotions are poison. What is your heart like when you experience those emotions? Well, you have a hardened heart. Can you love with those emotions? No, you can't. Now let's look at the second category, heartache. What's your heart like when you're feeling those kinds of emotions? There's no edge to them. There's a softness to them. They still hurt. Your heart aches. But your heart can be tender, and you can love with those emotions. Do you see the difference between the two categories? When do you experience one versus the other? First of all, we experience feelings in the devastating category when you experience something that you need to happen and it doesn't happen. Your life depends on it. In other words, your internal well-being depends on whether it happens or it doesn't happen. That's devastation. When do you experience the heartache category? When you experience something that you want very much to happen, but you don't need it to happen. And then it doesn't happen? Heartache. In other words, your life doesn't depend on whether it happens or not. You would like very much for it to happen, but your internal well-being doesn't depend on it. That's the heartache category. We can live with disappointments that produce heartache and remain internally intact. We can experience heartache and still know that we're loved and we have meaningful purpose to live. And we can still love. But when our disappointments turn to devastation, it can destroy us. We cannot survive devastation. Devastation has the capacity to destroy us. I'm going to share two illustrations that are difficult to hear, but they clearly illustrate the difference between experiencing pain as heartache versus experiencing it as devastation. first illustration came from a friend who years ago used to take young people on wilderness canoe trips, and this was back east. And back then, they used aluminum canoes on those trips, and they would take them on whitewater canoe trips. And on this one particular trip, they were navigating some rather technical water, fast white water, and two of the boys got their canoe wrapped around a rock. And the force of the current pushed that canoe right around the rock, and it split it in two. One of the boys was upstream, and the force of the current pushed him into the jagged edge of the canoe that was torn, and it cut him in two. He died. It was something that you cannot survive. And that is my picture of devastating pain. You cannot survive devastating pain. It will destroy you. But there's another way of experiencing pain that doesn't have the capacity to destroy. This illustration comes by way of Larry Crabb. He shared the story of a woman in counseling many years ago in Florida. And Larry was trying to help this woman understand that it's possible to experience intense pain without it having the capacity to destroy us. And he asked her to picture a plank, like a balance beam, suspended 5 foot in the air. And he said, could you walk on it? And she said, yeah, I probably could. It's up there a little ways, 5 foot in the air. And he said, what would happen if you slipped and fell? Well, I might get hurt a little bit, but I think I could get back up on that balance beam and walk again. And then he said, now raise that balance beam to 1,000 feet. Can you walk on it? It's the same balance beam, but it's 1,000 foot in the air. Well, the fear factor is going to greatly increase. And you cannot survive a fall from 1,000 foot. So Larry's response after giving that illustration, he said this statement. He said, in the Christian life, there are no 1,000-foot drops, only 5-foot drops. In other words, even though painful things happen in life, they don't have the capacity to destroy because our life doesn't depend on whether they happen or not. Our life depends on God. Well, shortly after sharing this illustration with this woman, this woman's husband had a birthday that was coming up, and she wanted to do something special for his birthday. And he had always wanted to go on a hot air balloon ride. So she made arrangements for he and some of his friends to go on this hot air balloon ride. It was on a Saturday. They all gathered around. The balloon was tethered. They're all excited about going. First trip. And they climbed in, untethered the balloon, and started to take off. But something happened, and the balloon caught fire. And when it caught fire, it began to rise rapidly. And they were desperately trying to get the fire out, but they couldn't get the fire out. And pretty soon, the basket was burning. And one by one, they began to jump out. And she ran over to where the first man fell, and it was her husband's friend. And of course, he was dead. And the thought that went through her mind was, in a few seconds, my husband is going to be jumping to his death. But it's only a 5-foot drop. In other words, even the death of her husband did not have the capacity to destroy her, because her life did not depend on whether he lived or not. Oh, it'd be tremendous heartache. And she would miss him terribly. She'd grieve. But it would not be devastating. She could go on with life knowing that God's love would sustain her. And he promised to be with her always through it. If our trust is in God, it will never have the capacity to destroy us. Because no matter what happens, our life and our internal well-being won't depend on our circumstances. We're loved with a steadfast love that will never fail. And we still have meaningful purpose, because God has invited us to participate with him in what he's doing in the world today. And he's promised to be with us as we journey through it. Two ways of experiencing heartbreaking pain. One has the capacity to destroy, the other doesn't. The difference between the two exposes where our hope is placed. So when you're disappointed, if you notice the things that you feel fall into the devastation category, it's telling you something. It's telling you that you have misplaced hope someplace. Listen to how it's described in Psalm 33. No king is saved by the size of his army. No warrior escapes by his great strength. A horse is a vain hope for deliverance. Despite all its great strength, it cannot save. The psalmist poetically described placing hope in the wrong things. He called it vain hope. It's a false hope. But what about when our hope is in the Lord? The next verse says, "But the eyes of the Lord are on those who fear him, on those whose hope is in his unfailing love." And then the psalm concludes in verse 22, "May your unfailing love rest upon us, O Lord, even as we put our hope in you." So where is your hope placed? Many years ago, a friend came bounding up to me and said, "I think I'm the happiest girl on the face of the earth." She said, "I always heard this phrase, being on cloud nine, but I never knew what it meant until now. Now I know what it means. I'm on cloud nine." I said, "That's great. Tell me why you're on cloud nine." She described three things. First of all, she said that she had a new boyfriend. And it was her first really special, significant boyfriend. And he was great. He was everything that she always wanted in a man. He was good looking. He was ambitious. He had a great job. He was very kind and loving. She was thrilled. And then, secondly, she said she had a new job. It was her first really significant job. It was a career job, one that she'd always wanted, working at a place where she really wanted to work. Thirdly, she said, if that wasn't enough, I got a new car. It was her first really significant car, and it was a beauty. I responded to her, and I said, "That's great. Just don't let your happiness depend on those things." A few months later, my wife and I went to visit her, and as we walked up to the door, something was amiss. It was February, and the door was standing open. I called out her name, no answer. And I called again, no answer. And then I noticed in the fresh snow, there were tracks going around the house. And so I followed those tracks, and they went around the house to the back in the greenhouse. And the greenhouse door was standing open. The tracks went into the greenhouse but didn't come out. So I walked around and I looked in the greenhouse door. And there she was. She had a shovel in her hand. And she was sobbing. And she was trying to dig in the frozen dirt. And there were a pile of wrapped presents off to the side of where she was trying to dig. I said, "What's going on?" And she was startled, and then she began to share. She said, "I think I'm losing my boyfriend." She had bought 14 presents to give to him just before Valentine's Day. One each day, leading up to the big one on Valentine's Day. And he didn't want him. He was no longer interested in dating her. In fact, he'd already started dating someone else. And she was crushed. And through her tears, she said, "Things aren't going so well at work either." Her boss was not very pleased in some of her work, and she was fearful of losing her job. And then she added one more thing. One day, she left work, upset, crying, tears were flowing, and she pulled out in front of traffic and totaled her car. The three things that she told me just a few months earlier had put her on cloud nine. Were the very three things that she brought up now. And she was devastated. She was so devastated, she no longer wanted to live. She was contemplating suicide. Where was her hope placed? It was in a relationship. It was in a career. And it was in possessions. And when they were torn away, she was devastated. But what if instead of putting her hope in these things for her life, she had put her hope in the steadfast love of the Lord for her life? And then these same three things happened. It would still hurt deeply. She would have experienced things like heartache, sorrow, sadness, grief. But she wouldn't have wanted to take her own life because her life and her internal well-being wouldn't be depending on whether those things happened or not. Her life would be depending on God's love for her and knowing that she still had purpose to live. Heartache? Yes. Devastation? No. The difference is found in where we place our hope. We live in a world that entices us to place our hope in places that cannot give us the life that we long for. We value our appearance. We value our status. We value our possessions. We value our money. We value our health and our strength. And we spend a great deal of time pursuing these things to bring us what we think will bring us life. But what happens when these things are stripped away? Do we experience devastation or heartache? What we experience reveals where our hope lies. Jeremiah 17 gives us a clear picture of false hope versus solid hope. Jeremiah 17. First of all, the false hope. Listen to these words. This is what the Lord says. Cursed is the one who trusts in man, who depends on flesh for his strength, and whose heart turns away from the Lord. He will be like a bush in the wastelands. He will not see prosperity when it comes. He will dwell in the parched places of the desert, in a salt land where no one lives. When my trust is in man, it won't go very well. Well, when do I trust in man? I trust in man when I trust in you to come through for me. When I trust in you to make me feel okay, I'm trusting in man. It could be a spouse. It could be a friend. It could be a business relationship. Anybody. When I trust in you to make me feel okay, I'm trusting in man. I'm also trusting in man when I trust in me. Whether it's I'm trusting in my intellect or my good looks and nice wavy hair. Or my strength, my abilities. I'm trusting in man. So whether I'm trusting in you to make me feel okay or whether I'm trusting in me to make me feel okay, I'm trusting in man. And look what it's like to have misplaced hope trusting in man. It's like a bush in the wastelands. You dwell in the parched places of the desert, a salt land where no one lives. My daughter and her family and my grandkids live in Colorado. They live in the San Luis Valley. It's a big agricultural valley. And they have irrigation there, some rich soil. And the crops that they grow are lush and green. It's very beautiful in the summertime when the crops are growing. But there's also a few pockets in that valley that's a salt land. All that's there is some sagebrush, some white patches of salt around, and nothing else grows. You can't farm it. It's useless. It's a salt land. I also noticed this in Israel and in Jordan. There were places that were just beautiful and lush. And then you'd go to some of these places that were just a wasteland and there's white on the ground. It's a salt land. Nothing grows. It's useless. No one lived there. It's useless. And that's the picture of placing our trust in man. Furthermore, did you catch that other phrase? When prosperity comes, he won't even see it. He'll miss it. It might be right in front of him, and he won't even see it. What a picture of misplaced hope. It ends up being a parched and lonely place. But now let's look at the next verses. contrasting when our hope is in the Lord. But blessed is the man who trusts in the Lord, whose confidence is in him. He will be like a tree planted by the water that sends out its roots by the stream. It does not fear when heat comes. Its leaves are always green. It has no worries in a year of drought and never fails to bear fruit. He'll be like a flourishing tree planted by a source of water and nourishment. Did you catch this little phrase? When the heat comes? Oh, the heat will still come. But its leaves will remain green, and it will continue to bear fruit. What a beautiful poetic description of the contrast between when I place my hope and trust in man as compared to when I place my hope in God. I want to grow. I want to flourish. And I want to bear fruit even when the heat comes. I don't want to find myself in a howling wasteland where nothing grows. We will all face many disappointments in life. And we'll experience times when the heat comes. Where will we place our hope in those disappointing times? Jesus himself gives us a clear picture of how to face our disappointments when our hope is placed securely in God. It's found in Matthew 26, 36 to 56. Jesus was in the Garden of Gethsemane just before he was about to experience the most agonizing and painful time in his life. He knew it was coming, and he invited his closest friends to be with him in this trying time. And Jesus shared deeply with his closest disciples, and this is what he said. My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me. Can you feel the intensity and the weight of the sorrow? Have you felt overwhelmed with sorrow? I have felt sorrow many times, but there's two that stand out the most to me. The first was a young boy when my mom died. It was a time of overwhelming sorrow. And the second was when my wife of 45 years died. It was overwhelming sorrow. Jesus, too, experienced overwhelming sorrow. He said, my soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. That's intense sorrow. And then the next words, stay here and keep watch with me. In this agonizing moment, Jesus exposed his troubled heart to his closest friends, and he invited them to join him in praying with him. At this point, Jesus went a little further and he fell on his face to the ground and he poured out his heart to the Father. He went to prayer alone, yet he was close enough to his disciples so that they could hear what he was praying about, and they recorded it. He told the Father of his deep desire to be spared of what was about to happen. But then he went even deeper in his heart, and he said that what he wanted more than anything else was to do his Father's will. He wanted that even more than avoiding the agonizing pain. Jesus was very in touch with the deepest longings of his heart. And in anguish, he poured out his heart to the Father. Luke's account adds an interesting detail. When Jesus was in anguish and was pouring out his heart to the Father, in Luke 22:43, it says, an angel from heaven appeared to him and strengthened him. When we depend on no one but God, he will meet us in some surprising ways and strengthen us in a way that no one else can. After pouring his heart out to the Father, Jesus came back to his disciples and he found them sleeping. A disappointment. He said, could you men not keep watch with me for 1 hour? And he asked Peter, watch and pray so that you not fall into temptation. And he said, the spirit is willing, but the body is weak. He wanted his disciples to be awake and be with him in this difficult time. But they fell asleep. It was disappointing. But Jesus didn't condemn them. He said, the spirit is willing, but the body is weak. I think it was like saying, I know that you wanted to be here. We've been up all night. You're tired. And he again invited them to come and join him and watch and pray. He went back to the Father, and he poured out his heart to the Father again. And once again, he returned to his disciples, and they were sleeping. They were tired. And this time he left them sleeping and went back. And once again, he poured his heart out to the Father. Returned to the disciples the third time. And he said, are you still sleeping and resting? Look, the hour is near, and the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us go. Here comes my betrayer. This was an agonizing time for Jesus because he knew what he was about to face. But furthermore, he faced this additional disappointment from his closest friends. He wanted them to be with him, to watch with him, to pray with him, and they kept falling asleep. It was disappointing. So what are some of the lessons that we can learn from Jesus' example here in the garden about dealing with our disappointment? First of all, it's pursuing relationship with God. Pour your heart out to God. It's the first thing Jesus did. He poured his heart out to God, letting God hear your struggle. The times of our deepest struggles are times for us to run straight to God. 1 Peter 5:7 says, cast all your anxiety on him. Why? Because he cares for you. When we know that someone cares for us deeply, it becomes both natural and healing to share our sorrows and our anxiousness. And no one cares more deeply than God. And then depend on God to be your source of life. Jesus looked to the Father for his source of life. He entrusted himself to the Father. He was deeply wronged over the next many hours, but he depended on no one but the Father to sustain him. 1 Peter 2:23 says it this way. When they hurled their insults at him, he did not retaliate. When he suffered, he made no threats. Instead, here it is, he entrusted himself to him who judges justly. When we depend on no one but God, we will come to experience God in a way that no one else can fulfill. But Jesus also stayed connected to those who disappointed him. While he depended on no one but the Father to sustain him, he invited his closest friends to enter the process with him. And after he spent time pouring his heart out to the Father, he returned and they were sleeping. They failed to be there for him like he wanted them to be there. They disappointed him, not once, but three times. So how did Jesus handle his disappointment? He spoke to their failure and invited them back into intimate relationship with him. But then he poured his heart out to the Father again. So ask trusted friends for their companionship, support, and prayer. Jesus asked his closest friends to walk with him, to enter his agony. He shared with them and invited them. And he exposed his heart. He was vulnerable with his friends. He invited them to hear what was troubling him. He wasn't depending on them. He was depending on the Father. But he invited his friends into the process. Do you have a few trusted friends who you can be completely vulnerable with? And be honest with those trusted friends about your disappointments. Jesus said, "Could you men not keep watch with me for 1 hour?" Then he said, "The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. The body is weak." Didn't condemn them. He recognized and acknowledged that they did want to be with him. But he was also specific about his disappointment. He wanted his companions to be watching and praying with him. Can you be honest with those who fail you without condemning them? Do they feel invited into your heart? Facing disappointments like Jesus did in the Garden of Gethsemane can open your eyes to finding hope. But not just any hope. Not a vain hope. Not a false hope that's rooted in something useless, but a true hope that's rooted in the steadfast love of God. So we're all going to face many disappointments in life. Will you let those disappointments expose to you where your hope lies? It's only when we see where we have misplaced our hope that we can realign our hope to a steadfast and sure place, the steadfast love of God. Thank you. Thank you.